It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, March 1st. Oregon lawmakers took massive steps this week toward addressing the top two priorities in Salem, the addiction crisis and the state's housing emergency. We will dive into great depth next week on the emotional testimony and ultimately bipartisan push to recriminalize drug possession in the state. But today, we'll focus on housing, land use laws, and the debate over how cities can or should grow. Welcome to the podcast. I'm OPB Politics editor Andrew Thien.
I'm OPB Politics reporter Lauren Dake.
So, Lauren, housing and homelessness have been the top issues in the city of Portland for nearly a decade now. Some of us are old enough to remember when former Portland Mayor Charlie Hales declared a housing emergency, and that was back in 2015. Statewide, it's also been a major focus in the past few years. Lawmakers last year approved $200 million for housing, but the Oregon State Senate approved a major package on Thursday. What's the goal? What's in the bill?
Well, the goal is pretty simple. We need more housing in the state, and we need it fast. But the bill is a little bit more complicated and pretty wide-ranging. So the entire housing package has about $370 million, and it's meant to largely go toward boosting housing production. Mm-hmm. But it carves out money for a lot of things. For water infrastructure projects, it has money to help fund existing homeless shelters and money to boost recovery housing. There's money in it to provide air conditioners and air filters to people on an emergency basis. It also creates a new statewide housing production and accountability office, and that's really meant to help address complaints or concerns from local governments or developers and basically streamline the process of building a bit. But perhaps the most contentious portion of this very wide-ranging bill would give cities a one-time chance to bypass state land use laws to build faster. Usually, cities are restricted to build inside what's known as the UGB or the urban growth boundary, and that can be a long, lengthy, sometimes litigious process. This basically gives them a chance to sidestep much of that and build faster.
So you were down in Salem this week for the vote. How did this go down? What was the debate like? And can you describe the sentiment for and against it?
So last legislative session, which was about 8 months ago, on the final day of session, the governor herself, Tina Kotek, was roaming the Capitol hallways trying to convince members of her own party to vote for this bill, a similar bill. The intent was to allow cities to bypass state land use laws to build faster. The governor's lobbying did not work. Democrats did not vote for the bill, and there were enough Republicans out of the building on the walkout that it did not pass. And, you know, it felt dramatic. This session, there was definitely some heartburn over this land expansion idea of the bill, but the debate on the floor was pretty tame, very cordial. You had Senate Republican leader Tim Knope, he's a Republican from Bend, praising it. You had very liberal members of the Democratic Party praising it. Everyone was giving kudos to the governor for her hard work to find consensus on the measure. So really, the bill passed easily. There were certainly some lawmakers who voted against it, and they did so primarily because they felt like certain projects that they wanted to be included were not included. But overall, it was a drama-free vote on the Senate floor. And they really compromised on the measure. They lowered the acreage amount and basically just managed to bring a lot more people to the table.
And you mentioned the governor, obviously. What has she had to say about the revised plan moving through the legislature this go around?
The governor knew that the legislature would change this proposal. You know, she knows this process very intimately. So, you know, she said she feels like this is still one of the strongest housing production policy and funding packages to pass the legislature in recent years. She basically said she's now switching her gears, her focus, to ensuring that the dollars that are spent are really resulting in housing. Democrats scaled back her initial funding request. She initially asked for about $500 million. And like I said earlier, they spent about $370 million. But really, she largely got what she was after here.
Earlier this week, you published a story that examined what cities are saying so far about this plan. You kind of focused on two of the largest cities in the state that are most likely to see some growth. What did they have to say about the bill?
Right. So the part of this bill, like we said, that was really contentious was this idea that cities wouldn't have to follow our state's land use laws. And, you know, those laws have, they've governed the way that we have lived in this state for 50 years. They're really the reason why it's not just like one big strip mall from Portland to Salem, and why we still have farms and forests left. So understandably, people want to make sure the land use system isn't eroded. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, people have argued that it has to change. It has to be flexible. It has to be nimble in order for it to continue to work. So this bill would give cities a chance to bring in either 100 acres if their population is greater than 25,000, no more than 50 if their population is less than 25,000. And it would allow the city of Portland and its suburbs to add about 300 acres. Cities would also have to ensure that at least 30% of the homes that they built on this expansion are affordable. So there's a lot of restrictions within the ability to sidestep these land use laws. Two of the biggest cities, Hillsborough and Bend, that were really expected to take advantage of this, both had real concerns that they may not be able to qualify. So I don't know, for all the worry and the heartburn this portion of the bill created, we really don't know what's going to come of it. We don't know what will result from it. And there's no real clear test case that we could identify at this stage.
Let's stick with kind of the nitty-gritty land use, urban growth boundary piece of this. There's a fascinating story playing out a bit in the legislature this week, and it's also right in Hillsborough's backyard, right on the urban fringe of the metro area in a town maybe most famous for its garlic festival.
Yeah, this story really illustrates how, okay, maybe you think land use policy is like wonky and boring, but when you realize how much it impacts people's quality of life, it makes sense how emotional of a subject it is. So Mike Rogaway at the Oregonian did a really great deep dive on this subject, but I'll try and boil it down. There are people in this small town of North Plains, west of Portland, which has a population of like 3,500, and they're trying to more than double their size. They're trying to add more than 800 acres for housing and commercial development. That's a lot of acreage in an area that has a lot of farms. So people who want to stop this boundary expansion and preserve the farmland have gathered enough signatures to put the issue on the May ballot. Nobody can remember another instance where this has happened, where people have tried to reverse an urban growth boundary on the ballot. So basically, lawmakers are pushing a bill that would prevent this from going to the ballot. And members of both parties are behind it because they basically said, you know, if you could refer an urban growth boundary expansion to the ballot, that would just inject all kinds of uncertainty into the land use process and basically upend the process. It can take a decade for a UGB expansion to work its way through this entire system. And if people could just refer it to the ballot at the end, it would make it really hard for a city to plan long term. And it's a really expensive process as well.
Oregon obviously loves its citizen referral process. It's kind of interesting, Lauren, that this is, you know, a test case we haven't seen before.
Yeah, and we're seeing interesting iterations play out all over the state. You know, I also talked to the mayor of Washington County's King City, which sits southwest of Portland. Mm-hmm. Her name is Jamie Fender, and she said that her city council has been working on adding about 500 acres inside the urban growth boundary for a long time, for more than a decade. They've spent millions of dollars on planning and community outreach. And the plan was so controversial that city residents decided to recall the mayor and members of the council to stop it. So land use gets emotional.
Okay, and we will certainly be keeping tabs on all of this as it plays out during the election cycle. But taking a step back, this bill now heads to the House. What can we say about the prospects there?
It looks good. You know, it seems like the House could vote on this package as soon as Monday. They also have an additional part of their package, House Bill 4134, which includes about $7 million they plan to give to directly to some cities who can show that they have shovel-ready projects, meaning just projects that are ready to go. So it seems like this is going to be on the governor's desk pretty soon.
One thing that's kind of been a story from watching the legislative session play out is that there's really kind of been a lot of what seems to be crossing the aisle going on. We have Democrats and Republicans getting along on legislation, on you know, important legislation that they talked about before the session began. Am I accurate here? Is that a fair assessment of what we've seen play out so far?
I think largely what we've seen this short legislative session is, yes, the way it was meant to work in a lot of ways. There have been debates. Bills have failed. Bills that failed last session were worked in the interim with stakeholder groups and lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. The truth is that by the time these bills hit the floor, insiders already know really who is voting for them and who isn't. The floor debate is kind of a last chance to get your opinion on the record. So, yeah, people have worked together on the two big issues this session, the housing package and the effort to roll back Measure 110. And not everyone, you know, has agreed with the result, but people are staying in the building and they're voting on the floor the way it was intended to be.
Okay, Lauren, you've covered Salem politics for a long time. Remind us, is it normal to have so much money to spend during a short session and so many big policy proposals? Because we're talking about big issues and a lot of money.
I think the fact that the state's revenue forecast has been really positive lately has played a role in why we're seeing some of these big funding proposals. But you're right. Historically, these short legislative sessions were sold to voters as a way to let lawmakers make minor budget adjustments in the off years. They weren't really meant to address large policy proposals or large budget issues, but they've certainly been trending that way for a long time. So I sort of imagine this is the way they're going to be for the foreseeable future, unless maybe we have another Senate president like Peter Courtney who pushes back on that. And now that I'm saying that, we'll probably never have another Senate president like Peter Courtney. So I'm guessing that this is the way it's going to be for a while.
All right. Let's leave it there for today. Thanks, Lauren, for all your work and for joining me.
Thank you, Andrew.
This week's episode was produced by Sage Van Wing, and our audio engineer is Stephen Cray. Our music comes from Audio Network. We'll be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.